AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. You know, it was almost like Corn Trader said, they did it. Now what? Corn was trading higher ahead of the report, but struggled to hold on to those gains after USDA cut carryover. Beans followed the soy products to the downside, and wheat tossed aside a potentially bearish rise in carryover to post solid gains.
Live from the grande finale of this week via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Champ Flory.
All right, Davis. Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, baby.
I wonder after I saw the initial reaction to the numbers, and we pushed to the upside in corn because of the 150 million bushel cut to the carryover estimates. That deserves a reaction. We did get that initial push to the upside, and then it kind of fell back. We had Deese corn futures all the way up to 503.5 at one point. First time that we've seen the new crop get to $5. The failure to hold above it, it makes me wonder how the market is going to react to that. But my thought was, Davis, if they would have left corn carryover at 1.502 billion bushels instead of knocking 150 million bushels off of it, I think corn might have gone higher today.
Okay.
And it's just because,
interesting. Okay.
They didn't cut it this month. They're going to have to cut it next month.
So
the next thing that's coming is the cut to carryover next month. But we got the cut to carry over, and it's sit back, scratch your head, and try to figure out, jeepers, if this old crop market's going to go to the upside from here, what's going to push it? So now we start to get some profit taking going in there. So it is a good question, and we are going to talk to Clayton Pope about what that might be. I think I know what it is. If the market is going to find its footing and push up to new highs again, I think I know what it would probably do it, but we'll wait until we get into that conversation with Clayton. Okay?
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
What? I can't help but wonder if there are farmers who are like, man, I sold too early just a few months ago, and now they're like, oh, thank heavens it didn't go higher. You know what I'm saying? Like, worry about that old crop. Don't worry about it.
I hear you. But, you know, it was a solid week for corn.
Oh, sure.
Really was. It was an impressive week. No doubt about it. All right, let's get to it. Let's get to some of those details.
Well, Chip, wheat futures posted solid gains ahead of the supply and demand report, and despite a bigger-than-expected carryover projection, the market held on to most of the gains into the close. Dry conditions and a dry forecast for the hard red winter wheat country attracted buying interest, and the slight risk of some freeze damage to the crop this weekend also limited selling interest. USDA put 2020 and 21 wheat carryover at 852 million bushels, up 15 million bushels from last month and 5 million bushels above the average pre-report trade estimate. July hard red winter wheat, 10.5 cents higher, 594 and a quarter. July soft red jumped a dime, 640 and a half. September spring wheat, 16 and one quarter cent higher on the day, 671 at the close. Chip.
Yeah. Egypt was back in this week, so we had a bit of a resurgence of some global export demand. Russia made most of filled most of that tender to Egypt, but nonetheless, Egypt was back. So I think that was a positive. There continues to be some uncertainty over exactly how the tensions between Russia and Ukraine is going to play out and how it might impact the trade out of the Black Sea. And it's dry up in the Canadian prairies. We can't lose track of that. Well, and U.S. spring wheat country, too.
Northern Plains, too, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't lose track of that. On the week, July SRW wheat up 30 cents. July hard red up 22.5. And get this. This is the big one right out the gate for the week. September spring wheat futures up 56 cents. That was a 9.11% gain on the week. Huge move in spring wheat.
Larger estimated feed and residual use, corn for ethanol use, and exports pushed total use up 150 million bushels from last month, dropping corn carryover by that amount. That dropped corn carry nearly 45 million bushels lower than traders anticipated. Gains posted yesterday and this morning ahead of the report pushed old and new crop corn to new contract highs, but a sell the fact reaction weighed on corn prices following the report. December corn futures cleared $5 for the first time, and traders anticipate limited selling interest in that contract as the market attempts to hold on to intended acreage. May corn futures 2.5 cents lower, 577 and one quarter. July corn firmed 0.75 cents, 562 3/4. December corn closed at 496.5. That's up 1 3/4 cents at the close, Chip.
On the week, May corn up 17.5 cents. D's corn up 12 cents. Good, a solid week for the corn market.
Well, as expected, USDA left the 20 and 21 bean carryover estimate at 120 million bushels, but it got there in a roundabout way, Chip. USDA raised estimated exports 30 million bushels, then offset that increased use with a 10 million bushel cut to estimated crush, a 17 million bushel slice to residual use, and a 2 million bushel trimming of estimated seed use. November bean futures spent the week inside of a 20-cent trading range just under contract highs. This flag formation on the daily chart makes next week's price action exceptionally important in determining upcoming price action. May bean futures 12 and a quarter lower, 14.03. July beans down 11 and one half, 13.98 and a quarter. Novi beans closed at 12.63 and a quarter, down a dime, Chip.
Yeah. We got a two-day flag pull on that flag formation that is there, and then a 4 or 5 day flag that has formed. So something that we need to pay close attention to. On the week, May soybeans were up a penny. November beans were down a half a cent.
USDA added 250,000 bales to estimated cotton exports and 50,000 bales to unaccounted use to trim 300,000 bales from ending stocks. May cotton 99 points higher, 82.40. December cotton jumped 66 points to 81.78. How'd the cottons do on the week?
Really good. On the week, May cotton up 456 points.
Hey-o.
That's a 5.86% gain.
Wow. Well, profit-taking weighed heavily on live cattle futures today. Boxed beef prices have been pushing higher on strong beef demand. That's limited selling interest in cattle. June live cattle, 245 lower, 122.57.5. October cattle down a buck 35, 125.70. May feeders down a buck 97 and one half to 149.62.5. Let's hit the snout side quick. Strong domestic and export demand for pork and a bullish chart pattern drove hog prices higher again this week. Today, May lean hogs were 95 cents higher at 106.37 and one half. June hogs gained a quarter to close at 108.95. Chip?
Okay. June live cattle on the week, they were up 2.5 cents. I mean, it's barely a move. It's literally one tick change on the week. May feeder cattle were up 40 cents on the week. Mm-hmm. And May lean hog futures up $3.55. That's the winner in the livestock market, a 3.45% gain there. So, big move. We got a lot to cover, a lot of perspective to gain in the conversation coming up with Clayton Pope from Clayton Pope Commodities right here on AgriTalk. Each year, there are billions of bushels of corn out there just waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues like climate change. Demand fluctuates. Exports are unreliable. So how do we use all that corn right here at home to change the world? POET is working hard to ensure reliable domestic demand for ever-increasing corn yields. Not only is the need for clean bio products made from your crops continuing to increase, nationwide adoption of E15 is also on the horizon. This would increase the amount of bioethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%, resulting in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year. That's 2 billion really good reasons to support biofuels. It's time for farmers and policymakers to unify around E15. Bioethanol is the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
Welcome back. I'm Chip. Got Davis with me, and report day. Big report day, really, when you get right down to it, because of really didn't expect a whole lot of movement. I thought USDA on the corn usage estimates might kick them down the road until May, and kind of, you know, maybe they would get lost then in the first official look at the 2021-22 marketing year, because next month is the first time that we will see the 21-22 numbers included in the supply and demand balance sheet. So, so that's always a big report. That's the one that people are going to, believe it or not, it's a 21 crop estimate that we're getting. But when they get those first numbers, Davis, one of the first things they'll think about is what it means for 22 crop plantings.
Well, you know, it sounds like somebody's going to be surprised, Joe. Too soon.
Love it. Okay, let's get into the conversation right now with Clayton Pope from Clayton Pope Commodities. My friend, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Hello, Chip. Hey, I'm great. It's great to be back.
Good, good, good. So let's just start with your overall impressions here, the reports. What are your thoughts?
Well, I guess the overall impression at first is kind of disappointing market action, I'd have to say. I mean, at one point, you know, corn had, what were we, at 1.15 cents higher, I guess, in the May and finished at a new contract high and then finishes 2.5 cents lower. That's never a real encouraging sign, not to mention that May-July inverse backed up for the first time in a long time. It lost 3.25 cents. So maybe we're popping the bubble a little bit on that inverse. And beans, too, I mean, they barely saw positive action all day and, you know, just by 4 cents, I think, at the most. But finished near their lows here. So you got to walk away from it. I think, like you just described, I mean, November beans for the week were actually down 0.5 cents. And just not real encouraging action. But those bullish themes that are so big out there, particularly, you know, the tight, you know, carryovers, which just got a little bit tighter for corn, and then the concern about the safrinha crop are still alive and well, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. That is. I wanted to get there because, Clayton, it feels to me like the old crop corn market, as I described in the open, was they did it. Well, what's next? What are you going to show me next that might be supportive for the old crop market? It could be that safrinha crop out of Brazil, right?
I think that's the biggest wild card right now. Yeah. And a close second, and maybe first in some people's minds, but not really mine, is the you know, more exports. You know, the huge week of purchases by China a few weeks ago really got everybody excited, and a lot of people think there's a lot more where that came from, but they've sure been conspicuously absent ever since then. And I think an awful lot of this corn strength is sort of betting on the come that is coming, and I'm not so sure it is. I mean, you know, to just from the physical capacity of shipping this stuff, I think new sales would be really hard to carry off. You know, I mean, we got to average 60 million bushels a week in the next 20 or 21 weeks of actual shipments, and the 31 weeks so far we've only averaged 45 million. So we're really going to, you know, be able to crank it up and do that much more. Let alone if we, you know, continue to increase sales, it's a pretty you know, pretty tough nut to crack, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically what you're saying, because they reported in million metric tons or in metric tons, we basically have got to be either at 2 million ton or doggone close to 2 million ton in the Monday morning export inspections report week to week to get to, well, to ship all the corn that we've already sold, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And for that reason, I think it's hard to not be really bullish on basis. I think, you know, these merchandisers, they got a massive task ahead of them to, you know, originate these bushels from somewhere, especially when farmers are just hanging on, you know, with white-knuckle approach, hanging on to any old crop they've got left. I think everybody's, you know, so bullish and thinking, you know, some of the massive strength we've seen so far and the attitude is, I'm not going to let that happen to me again. I know it's tight. They'll have to come and get it from me. And it's hard to argue. It's worked so far. Yep. But on the other hand, it seems like, you know, in the big picture of my experience, I've been in this business a long time, is, you know, well, you know, bulls and bears make money and hogs get slaughtered. I think, you know, at some point, farmer holding usually doesn't end with the, you know, the desired result.
Right.
And at some point, you know, people have got to sell it, and it seems like more often than not, they end up chasing it down rather than, you know, everybody coming to them begging for the bushels.
Right, right. And then you got to get through the give-up selling for the market to free up and go back to the upside. How many times have we seen it? It has happened way, way, way too many times over the years, no question. Now, what you were talking about with basis and the export picture and the farmer holding, now throw in the fact that some ethanol production is coming back online, Clayton. USDA reflected it, put another 25 million bushels onto the corn for ethanol usage category there in the on the balance sheet. But they're coming back online, but I hope they got some inventory to get started with, you know. Otherwise, it's going to be hard to get.
It is going to be hard to get, and that would sort of be the other side of the coin, I think, in terms of a lot of people think they need to raise that export or ethanol number even more than they did today. And certainly if the recent trend continues, that I would agree with that. But these ethanol guys, you just wonder. I mean, in most markets, they're, you know, head and shoulders above other bidders for corn, and that's probably going to have to be the case, and then some, for them to continue to get the bushels they want at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? The refiners want, they seem to want the gallons now. They're not willing to do a whole lot of activity in that RIN market, and they want the gallons and to generate more RINs. And the only way that they can do that is by blending it up, man. And so it's going to be interesting to watch. And Clayton, What's your take on consumer confidence going into this summer and, well, spring and summer travel season? Because it feels like we're already seeing plenty of indications that
it sure does.
Driving is back.
I mean, yeah, you just go out on the highway anywhere, or even you know, people who've been to airports or anything. I mean, it's crazy. People are just really itching to get out there and return to a more normal life. And I think, you know, the driving miles are definitely going to be on the upswing here. And I think, you know, those assumptions and projections are probably pretty much on the money. I mean, there is a little worrisome sign. It seems like some of these COVID cases are on the uptick and hospitalization numbers and that kind of thing. So maybe it'll be the kind of thing we take two steps forward and one step back. I hope not. But, you know, it's looking a little iffy there, I think, just in the last week or so. But, barring a surprise there, I would expect you know, the driving patterns to continue to increase here.
Right, right. Have we seen the corn carryover estimate get as tight as it's going to get, or is there even more room to the downside?
I think there's probably a little bit more room, but I'm kind of the attitude that, you know, here we are, 1.35 billion bushels. I mean, that's tight. It's tightest than it's been for a number of years. Well, I guess since what, 2012 and 13, but. Yep. It's enough. I mean, it's certainly more than pipeline, and I think there would be room for us to, you know, maybe another 100 million or something like that. But you start approaching a billion or below, then it could be a whole different story. But I don't know. I mean, it so many people are pointing to the Safrina crop struggling here. If that turns out to be the case, I mean, it's still pretty early there. You know, they just really recently finished planting, although it's obviously a long, drawn-out affair, especially this year. But I think going forward, if they don't if we don't have a problem down there, or even if we do have a problem, I mean, you're probably heading for about an August harvest, you know, for the bulk of it. And so I would think that if they run into a problem, the stepped-up demand for our corn on the world market, i.e. China, well, most of that would probably fall into new crop more than old crop, it seems like to me. So that being the case, I don't think we are likely to see this carryover get a lot tighter. You maybe can get another 150 like we did today, get it down to 1.2. But even that, you know, when the closer you get to the end of the crop year, there's less reason for a big risk premium of it getting a lot tighter. So I think it'll get harder and harder to get a big reaction from it.
Does the cash market function how it normally would at a 1.2 carry?
Oh, I mean, you certainly have a lot more localized tough situations, you know, where they're running on fumes and you start to see, you know, real sporadic basis activity and differences and that kind of thing. But I don't think it would get crazy at 1.2. Okay. Obviously, if you get, you know, down to a billion or less, then certainly gets pretty goofy then, I think. But I don't think you see major disruptions with a little bit more tight.
Okay, good, good. I can't believe that segment's over. We're talking with Clayton Pope.
Man, it goes fast.
It does. Clayton Pope Commodities, good grief. We need to talk some more about what's going on in the soybean market. A lot of movement on the usage side. We'll see if that makes sense to Clayton next, right here on AgriTalk. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. China finally hikes its corn import forecast. China's Ag Ministry hiked its 2020-21 corn import forecast from 10 million metric tons to 22 million metric tons. USDA is at 24 million tons. Erratic rains possible for the dry Safrina corn areas, but a lot of follow-up rain is going to be needed there. Operations return to normal at Ukrainian ports after Russian military drills in the region. Sovicon raises Russian wheat crop forecast up another 1.4 million metric ton to 80.7. Argentine producers holding on to as many soybeans as they possibly can. That's what you do in hyperinflation. And Powell continues to deem inflationary pressures here as transitory. Try ProFarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. We are having a conversation with Clayton Pope, but before we get back to Clayton, Davis, if you would please go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat 10.5 higher, 5.94 1/4. September spring wheat 16.25 cents higher, 6.71. May corn futures 2.5 cents lower, 5.77 1/4. December corn closed at 4.96 1/2, up 1.75 cents. May soybean futures were 12.25 lower, 14.03. November bean futures closed at 12.63 1/4. That's down 10 cents on the day. May cotton, 99 points higher, 82.40. June live cattle, $2.45 lower, 122.57 1/2. May feeders dropped $1.97 1/2 to 149.62 1/2. And May lean hog futures, 95 cents higher, 106.37 1/2. That is your quick market recap, sir. Now back to you.
All right. Thank you very much. Clayton Pope, Clayton Pope Commodities is our guest today. Clayton, during the break, I was looking at my notes. One thing that I didn't ask you about the corn export sales that we've got on the books. I know that it's going to be a challenge to get it all shipped, but do you feel like these are how do you say it? Legit sales, or are you fearful that China's going to, you know, at the last second step in and cancel a bunch?
Well, that's always a risk. I think, as a matter of fact, I was going to bring that up too, as far as corn and beans both. But yeah, but there's what 1.2 billion bushels of corn sold and not shipped yet, and a lot of people say that, you know, there's hardly any beans in that category, but that's not really true either. There's 200 million bushels of beans that are sold and not shipped. And something that happened on yesterday's export sales, it went by largely unnoticed, it seems like, but China did cancel old crop buys of beans, and basically it looked like they just rolled into new crop. And it wasn't a big amount, 200,000 metric tons, about 8 million bushels, but that's a significant development, I think. So, you know, if they did that on beans, then who can blame them? I mean, Brazil's FOB basis is like 80 cents cheaper than the U.S. So I think if we go down the road and they start to feel a little bit more comfortable with the look of that safrinha crop, I think you could easily see the same thing happen in corn.
Yeah.
And that's very definitely a risk, I think.
Okay. This whole risk on beans and the fact that we did get the cancellations confirmed yesterday, might that be why this bean market underperformed in relation to corn this week?
I think that's part of it. Another part of it, though, I think, is what I would call sort of a pass the baton concept. And that is that, the carryover in beans here in the U.S. is pretty alarming. It's 120 million bushels. I mean, we've certainly been tighter than that. In 2013, we got down to a 92 million bushel carryover. But the fact is that with those bushels, hang on one second. I think it's, how would I say it, that we can't lose sight of the fact that we're just wrapping up the biggest single country's bean harvest in history. You know, and USDA just confirmed today that the numbers are even higher than we thought. You know, Brazil.
Yeah, added 2 million ton.
Yeah, so no matter how tight it is here, the world is not out of beans. It's, like I said, it's sort of a pass the baton concept. The world users of beans can get beans, period. We're not short of beans on a global basis. So, we can import beans if we have to here, and there's no question we will. They left that number unchanged in today's report. It's 35 million bushels, but if you go back, that number on a month-to-month basis in the supply-demand reports has been as high as 90 in 2013. Yeah. It ended that year at 72 million. Well, from 35 to 90, that's 65 million bushels. That's more than half the current projected carryover. So there's a huge escape valve there, or a pressure release valve, I'd say, as far as beans go. So, I mean, I want to be bullish as beans as much as anybody, and you look at these carryovers and so forth. I mean, it's always like a pile of gasoline-soaked rags. Things could go absolutely crazy, but people shouldn't lose sight of the fact that it's very possible we can squeak through here without, real major market disruptions.
Okay. So Novi beans this week down a half a cent, and Deese corn up 12 cents. Mm-hmm. And beans, everybody says the beans don't have enough acres in the prospective plantings report, Clayton. It doesn't look to me like the market's all that worried about it.
Isn't that weird? I know. Yeah. I mean, when I compare those stocks to usage ratio, even after today's numbers for old crop, I mean, corns is over 9%. Beans are 2.6%. You know, there's no comparison in bean tightness compared to corn. But again, I think that goes back to the fact that world beans are available now. World corn, not so much.
Right.
The safrinha crop won't be available for quite a while. It does make you wonder.
Yeah. Can we add? I'm thinking that we can add somewhere between 2 and 2.5 million to corn and soybeans combined. Divvy it up however you want to divvy it up.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back at prior years in terms of like some of the bigger increases we've had, I mean, there's certainly, I think, again, it was 2012 and 2013 where we did have the biggest jumps. 2012 in beans increased 3.3 million bushels or acres, and corn in the same year 1.3. So that's 4.6 million acre increase from the March 31st report to the final acreage report. Yeah. And you've got just about as good an incentive, this year as you did then. I mean, prices were higher then, but I mean, still, there's a big draw, I think, to increasing those acres, not just here, but globally too. I mean, that third corn crop in Brazil is picking up acres, and that's just what happens with these kind of prices.
Yeah, that is absolutely right. So the conversations that you're having with clients right now, well, I'll bet a lot of your guys over in Illinois were doggone busy this week, weren't they?
They really were. Yeah, it took a little bit of break the last couple of days with all this rain we've had, but and even that was spotty. Some guys have gone, you know, without stopping here. So, yeah, people are getting a pretty decent start, it sounds like, both corn and beans, Indiana
yeah.
as well.
What's the conversation that you're having with your clients right now when it comes to risk management strategies?
Well, it's funny. People are, you know, they're afraid to be an aggressive seller after what happened last year, and who could blame them? And especially when you look at how tight carryovers are. And there's no question, it seems like the downside is somewhat limited for now. I mean, we're going to have a really good, you know, production year to really start looking at more comfortable carryovers, it seems. But, and then with these inputs being so high, too, they're a little reluctant to you know, really be an aggressive seller because it's going to be more expensive than ever to grow the darn thing. But for the most part, people are very much all ears in terms of ways to protect this. I mean, we've been preaching some of these min-max type approaches, you know, where you buy a close to the market put and sell an above the market call. And those are great. You do have to commit to them for a while because it's basically a play on time premium decay. You know, so if you put it on and then get spooked out on, you know, a rally, I mean, you can always roll up those short calls or whatever, but it's you got to know what you're doing, I think, to get into those. But I think that's an extremely appropriate tool for the times right now. I really like that. And another thing I think is worth mentioning is, as bullish as the fundamentals are, they didn't really get a lot more bullish today. I mean, that corn number was, they lowered the carryover a little bit more than people thought, but I think the whisper number was at least that tight. Okay.
Yep. And, I think so too.
And the fact that they increased exports and we still didn't have a jarring reduction in the corn carryover and no reduction at all in the bean carryover, that's a little negative. But the point I want to make here is that when you chart all these commodities, whether it's like the stock market indexes like S&Ps and crude oil and corn, beans, wheat, it's amazing how it's like the birds of a feather flock together. They all kind of follow each other. So an awful lot of this strength, I think, is tied to just this huge reflation that's going on. And that doesn't appear to, you know, be ready to stumble. I mean, the stock market's making record highs as we talk here. And it just seems like it's just ad infinitum as far as government money hitting this economy and stuff. But
yeah.
At some point, you think that would reach a limit in terms of if its impact. But I think no question that a lot of the strength we've been enjoying is not only due to the fundamentals, but also just due to that whole concept.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and we've got those higher spec limits now. They can, yeah, they were big players in the ag commodities before we got the expanded position limits, and they're even bigger now.
Man, yeah, I haven't seen today's commitment of traders report, but that corn net long position's got to be over 400,000 contracts after this week. I mean,
that's gonna feel weird.
Just keep getting it up there. It's pretty wild. But,
yep.
You know, we'll see. Everybody's on the same side of the ship right now, which sometimes is a little scary. But don't get me wrong, there's all kinds of bullish arguments, that's for sure. But it's things have a way of changing. I just think people should, you know, have their eyes open and, you know, try to ensure future prosperity where they can.
Okay. Real quick, what are you watching most closely the next 30 day? U.S. weather, Brazilian weather, or corn loadings?
Brazilian weather, I think, is probably the single most important thing in my mind. Of course, any new sales would have a pretty big effect, with sales or cancellations, for that matter. But I don't know. I think inspections is pretty much a foregone conclusion. Those are going to be pretty doggone high for corn going forward. Yeah. They just have to be. So, you know, when you see these, you know, weekly numbers of whatever, 80 million bushels or something, it's got to be that, period.
Right.
So it won't be surprising when it happens, I think. But, Brazil will probably be the single most important thing. And
okay.
Then, you know, spring weather, as far as U.S. planning goes, is always big, but it's looking great right now.
It's outstanding to talk with you again, Clayton. Thank you so much for making time.
Hey, thanks a lot, Chip. I appreciate it, too. Take care.
All right, man. That is Clayton Pope, Clayton Pope Commodities. Davis and I are going to put a big old ribbon on this week when we come back right here on AgriTalk.
You suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk. I can't go.
Well, there's a Good Friday song.
Don't tell me you're not dancing.
Well, if I did, I'd be lying, Chip. Wait a second. Hold on.
A little air drumming? Maybe.
Hold on. Joe, kick the table. I think the record player is stuck again. Kick the table, Big Apple. It's stuck. We can't keep doing this. Why do we play the scratchy records the same time each week? I don't get it. It's almost like he's doing it on purpose, Chip.
I know it. I know it. It's crazy. Holy smokes. Like the last two or three weeks, I was waiting for it. I was anticipating it. And today it just completely got away. Well, I was dancing Slid pretty right hard. I, yeah, I was dancing pretty hard. So
sure, sure.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back.
The bean market, characterized in today's show by Clayton Pope, Clayton Pope Commodities, as a pile of gasoline-soaked rags, according to my notes here. Did you catch that?
Yeah, yeah. You know, and a couple of thoughts went through my mind. Number one, who would keep that pile of rags around?
Right.
You know? And you hear about that from time to time. Where, you know, garage fire in town.
Yes.
Stuff like that. You hear about that stuff? It happens. I don't know why, but it does happen. And Clayton's right. You know, when it takes off, you don't want to be close to it.
No, no.
Okay.
I'm not even sure how you, because I know you can't put out a grease fire with water. I don't know how you put out a gasoline fire. What's the trick with that?
I mean, think time.
Because I'd run out of baking soda pretty quick.
Yeah.
And yeah. Deal like, by the time I got to the kitchen and then back to the garage, like, I'd need enough baking soda for the whole garage type of deal.
Right, right. You just got to wait it out.
Okay.
Let it burn up, whatever.
Sounds like a risky biz, them soybeans.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. Here's the one that stuck with me. And the spec position limits now are so big.
Right.
Are so big that a canoe isn't big enough anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because he made the comment, you know, well, when everybody gets loaded on one side of the ship.
Yes.
You know what happens.
Ship. Yes.
You know what happens. Yes. You get the thing cockeyed in the Suez Canal is what ends up
That's
happening.
Right. We're back.
Then
up
everything
for, what,
gets all
weeks?
Bottled up.
Oh, yeah. Forget about it. You're done. You're done. You're not getting
look at
your
what
Xbox
that does
5.
To the supply chain.
Well, you thought you were miserable now.
That's right. But boy, excellent point. And he did go straight to the ship on that.
Yes,
and it makes sense. We at least have to start saying when everybody gets loaded on one side of the pontoon.
I was thinking pontoon as well. That's the next logical step after a canoe, right?
I think it is. That's where I'm going.
And then like paddle boat, you know, like on the Mississippi River. And then you get to a ship.
Right, right. You know, well, hey, let's not forget that we're talking about the grain business here.
We
could go from the paddle boat to getting everybody on one side of the barge.
Okay, okay.
Maybe
very
one
good.
Side of the tugboat, you know, mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I got a button for that.
Yeah, you do. Wow. I didn't realize we had a button for that.
Yeah.
So lots of interesting thoughts there. One of the most encouraging things that I heard him say was when I asked him about what happens to the cash market if we would get that corn carryover down into that 1.2 billion bushel range.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line is he said that it looks like the cash market would continue to function normally. There might be some regional issues that we would have to deal with, mm-hmm. but for the most part, everything would go ahead and function as is. You know, I was checking on a couple of things here.
Yeah.
Did you see that a volcano has erupted in the Caribbean?
Is that Titicaca by any chance?
Thinking about your last canoe trip? What's going on?
I just wanted to say Titicaca on a Friday.
Yeah, on the island of St. Vincent, it looks like. Is this true?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't see that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it might be true. That's
okay.
It's an
impressive. I'm
going
to go to the Google machine right now.
Okay.
Kill some time while I look this up, will you?
Okay, very good. Yeah, go ahead and do that because I do want to go ahead and take a look at the National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook. This is for April 15th through the 19th. I want to make sure that yes, it's been updated. We've got the below normal temperatures still across the middle of the country. The highest odds of below normal temperatures down in the panhandle again. So heads up down there on some of that winter wheat. Things might get a little chilly down there for a period of time. On the precipitation front, we've got below normal precipitation expected over the Corn Belt, all the way down into the northern half of Arkansas, eastern Oklahoma. So below normal temperatures and below normal precipitation in the 6 to 10 day, in the 8 to 14 day. It's still cold, April 17th through the 23rd, below normal temperatures expected over the eastern two-thirds of the country. And the area of below normal precipitation expands in the April 17 to 23, 8 to 14 day forecast. Easily covers the entire Corn Belt. You find anything?
Colder, you say? This, according to the Washington Post. Yes, volcano on St. Vincent erupts, spewing column of ash amid evacuations. Mount La Soufriere erupted on St. Vincent early Friday. Islanders were evacuated ahead of the eruption. I'm not seeing any reports on casualties here, though, although let's keep our fingers crossed that remains the case. Chip.
Darn right. Darn right. Okay, thanks for doing that. Hey, thank you so much for listening today. That's from me, that's from Davis, and that's from Big Apple, Joe Stackler. Come back Monday morning for Machine Repeat. Monday afternoon, Arlen Suderman from Stone X.